For years, the American public has been victimized by the so-called cinematic geniuses, telling us time and again to see inferior movies, leaving us bitter and lost with nowhere to turn. But no more! This travesty of justice cannot and will not continue, because we now have the Cinema Giants!
Hello and welcome to the Cinema Judge. Thanks so much for showing up. Out of all the things you could be doing in the world, you stop by to listen to this. I truly do not take that for granted. Now, for all my regular loyal judge heads out there who tune in for every episode, whether it's a blockbuster, independent film, or anything in between, you know I appreciate it and welcome back. You guys know I do a happy dance every time I see your city or country show up. If you're someone who listens to the end of each episode, you know I always try to give you a shout out. But here's the problem. Sometimes when people listen to older episodes, it's harder for that to show up in the tracking system or whatever they do to show me who listens to it. So if I don't say hello, someplace, someplace, or wherever you are, it's only because when you listen to the older episodes, it's tougher for me to find out where you listen from. So I'm not being a total jerk. It just, sometimes it's harder to track. But it's still so cool to see older episodes being listened to. Now, if you're a first-time listener, welcome aboard. I hope you enjoy the show. And if you do, please tell a friend. I know it's a pain in the butt, but if you do, pass it on, because more people listen. Hey, maybe some real person would want to come on the show. So let me tell you a little bit about our show. First of all, clearly, we are not journalists. And you're going to find that out real quick, because I'm going to butcher names the entire show. So this is just a heads up. Instead of apologizing every time I do it, I'm just getting it out of the way right now. See, we here at the Cinema Judge, we haven't gone to any elite Ivy League school and paid thousands of dollars to have somebody else tell us what it takes to make a good movie. We're smarter than that, and so are you. Nor have we traveled the world and spoken to the old wise men and asked about the deep, hidden meanings behind Hollywood's visions. We here at the Cinema Judge, we haven't done any of these things, but what we have done is watch a lot of movies. Some good, some not so good. And our goal here at the Cinema Judge is that everyone spends their hard-earned money wisely, because we all want the same thing, an enjoyable movie experience. Now, I've been doing this as a cable access show in Bloomington, Minnesota for over 20 years. And what we do there is this. The movie studios, they send us interviews, film clips, on-set footage. And when they had world premieres, they'd send us that stuff too. So this is what I do. I edit the interviews, the movie clips, into a giant infomercial of sorts. I let them pitch the movie to you. Sometimes you'll hear them talk about what attracted them to the script. And they often talk about the themes of the movie and why they think you should see it, and what they hope you will take away from the film. I simply collect the interviews as evidence and present them to you. And you decide if you want to see the movie or not. I always say this. I will never, ever tell you not to see a movie. All that matters is what you think. Who cares what I say or anybody else says? It's up to you. I truly despise having somebody tell me not to see something. Who are you to tell me? Again, that drives me nuts. I like to see every movie I can, or TV show. It doesn't matter. Because you never know when you're going to find that gem, that little movie that made you laugh, or even said that was a horrible film, but I had a great time doing it. I think we've all done it, and I've told this before. When I was growing up, my friends and I would always purposely rent or go to movies that were maybe not that popular, or people said it was horrible. That's the point. Making that memory, enjoying that moment of hey, that was a horribly made movie, but it was still fun, and that's what counts. Because like I always say, any movie is somebody's favorite movie. And to put it completely in simple terms, I stay out of the way. So consider this show your movie oasis. If you want people to yell, complain about Hollywood, the actors, whatever that is, there's a lot of pros to do that. And that's their shtick, and I'm all for it. That's not what we do here. Here's the movie. What do you think? I'll tell you if I like it, but I'm not going to tell you not to see it. All right, enough of that. Now, if you'd be interested in watching the TV version of this, you go to Bloomington, Minnesota's webpage. That's BLM as in Bloomington .mn/BTV-shows. And type in Cinema Judge, two words, and a whole bunch of shows will show up on demand anytime you want to watch. Not 20 years worth, but there's a few. So if you're wondering what's the difference between a TV version and this podcast version, well, that's simple. The TV version, obviously, you can watch everything, watch the interviews, the film clips, and on-set footage. And one of my favorite parts of doing a TV show is they give us a lot of B-roll, on-set footage. And sadly, we can't show that to you here because it's a podcast. Because sometimes they provide several minutes of on-set footage. No green screens, nothing, just them doing the scene over and over again. And I personally thoroughly enjoy that aspect of TV shows when they show on-set footage. That just shows them as performers, doing what they're doing without any music or anything like that. But most importantly, on a TV version, you don't see or hear me. It's all footage and information. Zero interruptions from me. Now, approaching the bench today, we have A Quiet Place Part 2. If you haven't seen the first one, do yourself a favor. See it. It is very original, and it just picks up from there. This movie stars Emily Blunt, Cillian Murphy, and John Krasinski. Now, here's the film's description. Following the events at home, the Abbott family now face the terrors of the outside world, forced to venture into the unknown. They realize the creatures that hunt by sound are not the only threats lurking beyond the sand path. Now, here's what I was going to do. I was going to play the trailer like I always do at this point, but the trailer, there's really very little dialogue. So what I'm going to do here first is going to play a featurette. And in this featurette, given to me by the studio, it's John Krasinski, the director, talking about finally putting this movie into the theater. And just a side note, when you go see this movie, if you do have a chance to see it in the theater, at the beginning of the movie, he actually gives you a personal thanks for showing up to the theater. I don't know, I thought that was kind of cool and classy. So here's a little featurette talking about how he's excited about having the movie seen by us in the theater.
Very exciting to be able to come back to the theaters to see A Quiet Place 2 because it was always designed for a theatrical experience.
It's such an inspired sequel. The world expands in this one because they have to venture out.
Run!
The second movie is much bigger. It's a much scarier movie.
It's a horror movie. You want to watch it in the dark. Jump and leap and gasp together. I'm really excited for you guys to see it.
Now, coming up in the next featurette, we're going to have Krasinski and Blunt talking a little bit more about the story.
Let's go.
Quiet Place Part 2 picks up right where Quiet Place Part 1 left off. The idea of these kids and this family dealing with their safety net being taken from them.
Evelyn is now a single parent, newborn baby. The barn's burnt down, the house is destroyed, and she's out there on her own and she has to protect these children.
They are forced to go out into the world and see how other people live. So they literally leave the path of safety and go into the unknown.
It's harrowing, it's terrifying, but at the core of it, it's a very human story.
I don't know why you came all the way up here.
There's nothing left. Please.
She's just trying to keep everybody alive and discovers that there's other people out there, and the world changes in an instant.
There are people out there worth saving.
You don't know, do you? I do.
We answered all those questions that the audience was asking about day one, especially how did this all start? Every step is much more treacherous.
It definitely ratchets up the tension, and you know they're not safe.
In the next featurette, you're going to hear from Krasinski talking about how much he needed Cillian Murphy, who plays Emmett, to play this role. So you're also going to hear from Cillian Murphy, talking a little bit more about the story and his character. And later on, you're going to hear more in-depth interviews about this, but this is just a featurette given to me by the studio.
The people that are left, what they've become, are not the kind of people worth saving.
Cillian Murphy plays Emmett, His talent is so good at all times, we couldn't wait to have him jump in our world. The beauty of Killian's character was that there's so much loss in his life. He doesn't feel the need to be a part of any community.
He is shut down, unwilling to help, frightened, fearful, done.
I don't know why he came all the way up here.
There's nothing left.
That encounter they have in that tiny little space is incredibly charged and incredibly intense.
I can't help you.
Please.
He's actually a representation of the rest of the world. There's a darkness to him, and there's a fear level to him that makes him unpredictable.
You don't know, do you?
That's what we're trying to create, that the audience goes, oh my God, what would I do if I was in that situation? I was just blown away by it.
Now, coming up first, we're going to hear from the director, John Krasinski. And he's going to talk about how successful the first one was and how much he appreciated how people connected to it. He's most known for his role in the massive hit The Office and, of course, the Amazon series Tom Clancy's Jack Ryan. He also starred in several movies from the 2000 film State and Main, the 2004 film Kinsey, 2005 Jarhead, and a whole lot more. But he's really starting to shine as a director. He did direct three episodes of The Office between 2010 and 2012, the 2009 film Brief Interviews with Hideous Men, in a 2016 film, The Hollers. But most importantly, he did a bang-up job in the first movie in this series, A Quiet Place, in 2018. So here he is talking about that first film.
For people to think that it was cool was so unbelievably emotional and beautiful. And it's not only the success of the film, which is great. I think it's the fact that people connected to what we connected to. Certainly, and Emily and I, you know, did this movie as a metaphor for parenthood, and the fact that people picked up on all that stuff, the fact that people loved all the detail of the first one, and all the elements of survival and this idea of family was just really overwhelming.
Now, coming up next, we're going to hear from Allison Seeger. She's one of the producers of this film, and she's going to talk about the themes of the first movie and how it graduated into the second movie.
John always said it was a love letter to his kids, which is a very odd thing to say about a movie like that, but in the sense that it's all about parenthood and protecting your kids and feeling like you can kind of create this bubble around them in a way. And if they just stay close enough, you actually have the ability to do that. I think the second film is sort of a graduation of that idea, in the sense that our family is forced to move on from this safe haven that they've created, from this home that they have. And when they step out into the world, both literally and figuratively, that's exactly what they're doing. And with Dad gone now, he sort of passed the torch in some way to his daughter and to the whole family, but particularly to Regan, who I think takes on that responsibility. And if the first one was sort of about protecting your family, then the second one is about the hope and sort of future that lies in the hands of the children.
Now, coming up next is one of those fantastic interviews that I love when these things come around. We're going to hear from another producer, Andrew Form. Now, in this interview, he talks about how when he first started talking to John about making this movie, or the first one, he said, okay, I'm done with it now. Now you guys find whoever you want and continue on. But then as time moved on, he started going, well, maybe I have a few more ideas. So this is just him talking about that whole process.
And the initial conversation was, you know, that John was like, you know, we made the first film. That's great. And I'm going to, you know, well, you guys figure out what you want to do with the second one. And then slowly I said to him, okay, we're going to go out to some writers. We'll get some ideas. And I started bringing ideas to John to see what he thought of all these ideas. And nothing was really sparking. And he's like, you know, I have an idea. And I said, well, okay, if you have an idea, why don't you think about it and get back to me? Next thing you know, he's like, I have an idea. It's pretty fleshed out. And I said to him, well, maybe you should write it. And he started writing it. And next thing you know, he's like, you know, maybe I'll direct it. And so here we are today.
Coming up next, we're going to have another producer, Brad Fuller. And he's going to talk about how they had to approach the second film. And again, he addresses the idea of John not wanting to direct it at first, but then how he came around. I just love these interviews.
The simple answer to that is the way you approach the second film is you get everyone from the first film because it worked. And John is a magnificent director and he wrote the script. And how do you argue with Emily and the kids? And so I think once we had a notion of what the story would be with those same actors and the same core skeleton group, you know, John initially decided he did not want to write and direct the movie. So we were taking writer meetings and we were struggling to find a great story, and just John started hearing stories, and I think that he felt that what he was hearing was not good enough for what the first movie was. So he stepped up and said, I'm going to write it. And I think once he started to write it, he fell in love with what he was writing because it was fantastic. And here we are again, you know, the band's back together.
Coming up next, we're going to hear from John Krasinski, and he now addresses that whole situation of not wanting to do it, but then, well, it is my baby. I might as well take it.
You know, the truth is I had no intention of doing a sequel. I don't think anyone thought that there would be a sequel. This was never designed to be a franchise. And yet I think that the power of the world is the thing that makes it so possible to delve into it again. What I mean by that is I think most sequels have a hero or a villain, and you have to build the world around them. And we have the benefit of having the opposite be true. We have this world built and ready to play in, so you can drop whatever hero and villain you want into that world, and that's what's really exciting about it.
Now, coming up next, we're going to hear from Emily Blunt, who plays Evelyn. And in this interview, she's going to talk about how they never planned to have a sequel. It was just open-ended, this is how it is. But she was so amazed, and they were all amazed, at how much people connected to these characters, the family, how original this film was. So she talks a little bit about the process of how it moved on to being more than just a one and done. Now, if you don't know who Emily Blunt is, may I educate you? She got her first start in the 2003 film Warrior Queen, but got her big shot, her breakout role in a 2006 hit The Devil Wears Prada. And in 2007, Charlie Wilson's War, 2012, Looper, 2014, Edge of Tomorrow, which was a fantastic movie. And they're probably going to make a sequel. They're working on it. If you've never seen Edge of Tomorrow, give that a whirl. She's spectacular. 2015, another great movie. Sicario, fantastic movie. 2016, another great film. The Girl on the Train. And on I could go about her. She's just an amazing, talented actress. If she's in it, it's worth seeing. So here she is talking about this movie.
We made the first one without the intention of wanting to do a sequel. So John always liked it being open-ended. And then when the movie came out and it had this sort of meteoric life that was really unexpected and thrilling, obviously, for us, I think we didn't anticipate such an investment in the family or in the world and a desire to see what other mileage you could get out of that world, you know. And I think John had like 30 pitches that came at him. They brought in writers because he was kind of reluctant to write it and do it. And then all of a sudden, I remember a couple of months later, we were in Hawaii. I was shooting a movie in Hawaii. And he suddenly just goes, I have an idea. And that was it. And he started, and he pitched me the opening. And I was like, we got to make this movie. It was just so good. It was undeniable.
Coming up next, we're going to hear from the producer, Brad Fuller, talking about what Krasinski brings to this film.
John brings an elegance and an intellectual component to the storytelling that we hadn't really had before. He, you know, the way that I feel about the characters when I see them on screen and the way the audience felt about the characters when they see them on screen is a certainly more elevated involvement than we've had before. So I think that John has many strengths. Obviously, working with his wife creates an incredible, wonderful, and safe environment on set, and I think that that transcends all the other actors and everyone feels great for being here. But John is he's just an incredible quarterback. He has the capacity to, he wrote the script so he knows every scene and what's coming before and what's coming after, and he's challenging himself on a daily basis to come up with different shots or more elevated ways of telling the story.
Coming up next, we're going to hear from Emily Blunt, who plays Evelyn, and she's going to talk about how she feels this movie is a lot more emotional than the other one.
I just think for me, I found this one emotionally just a more intense experience because there isn't any respite from the agony of what they've gone through. There's not one moment where it's pleasant for them. It's just urgent, and it is like a runaway train, this film. And I think if the first film was almost like, how do you avoid getting cut? I feel like the essence of this film is, oh my God, how do we stop the bleeding? You know, it just doesn't stop. And so I feel probably one of the most intense experiences I've had doing some of those scenes.
Now, coming up next, we'll hear a little bit more from Emily Blunt when she's talking a little bit more depth about her character and how her kids have to grow up really fast in this film. They just can't sit back and wait for things to happen. So here she is talking a little bit more about the family dynamic in their characters.
I think that broken promise is a really harrowing experience for the kids, but ultimately I think it's a very powerful message that we see generationally. What happens within this family is that the kids forge ahead, is that the kids have to grow up, they have to take charge. And also with Evelyn's character, with my character Evelyn, she is now a single parent, newborn baby, house is destroyed, two other children to protect. And she's out there, she's exposed, and she's grief-stricken. And so it's a really intensely emotional state that she's in. And the world is very daunting suddenly.
Coming up next, we'll hear from the director talking about how in the first film, his character wanted to live one way and his wife lived another way. And now in how this movie, things are moving around and they have to find a way to survive and thrive. This is just a really cool interview, seeing how he sees these characters and what they have to deal with.
One of my favorite things about the first movie was this dichotomy of surviving versus thriving, that my character was really content with just surviving, that there needed to be no flourish in life. It just was about putting your kids to bed and making sure that they're safe. And the mother's character, Evelyn, that wasn't enough, that you couldn't just survive in a world. You had to thrive. You had to let these kids live a full life. And I think that the real fun part for me writing was playing with that dichotomy again in the second one, that basically her idea of thriving may have put her husband in dire danger and sort of been one of the reasons that killed him. So I think that she's sort of investigating that theory and reinvestigating it. And she sort of becomes the protector and the survivalist and certainly doesn't want to lose anyone else in her family.
Now, coming up next, we're going to hear from the producer, Allison Seeger, talking a little bit more about the second movie.
I think the fun of this movie is putting them out in the world and saying, how are you going to not only survive and stay quiet? Because what the slate that wasn't wiped clean is the rules of the movie. So they have to kind of live by the same rules that they did before. They just don't have the safety net that they had before. So now to go out in the world with a baby in a box and along the way to have all different kinds of injuries and to survive all these different things, I think it raises the stakes in every single way because the same rules apply, except now it's a free for all. They don't know the terrain. They don't know who they're going to run into. They don't know what they're going to come up against. So it just makes it that much more terrifying.
Now, coming up next, you're going to hear from the other producer, Andrew Form, and he's talking a little bit more about the second movie also.
The first film was a very intimate story about a family living on a farm in this world. And you witness that, yes, there are creatures out there, but you really don't know what's going on around the world. So I think you automatically want to open it up a little bit more. And we knew we were going to take the family off the farm. So, you know, yes, it was definitely a choice to show that this has happened all over the world.
Coming up next, we're going to hear from the great Emily Blunt talking a little bit more about this movie.
Well, I think John was always really inspired by the idea of, we know how the Abbott family fared in the first film. They were in almost quite an insular, protected safe haven that gets completely destroyed when Evelyn goes into labor and has a baby in a bathtub. So I think, you know, and then now she's in this place where they figured out how to kill them. So that's a big hopeful thing. But she's got a brand new baby who doesn't understand the rules of the game. So that's you have a newborn baby who's a horror tool in itself. And she has these two beautiful children. How does she keep them alive? Where does she go? What does she do? Who will help her? And the idea of, we saw how the Abbott family did in the first movie, but John was like, how did everyone else fare? How was everyone else affected by this world? How are they living? And he was so interested in that. So I think that was why the world has to expand. It's a sequel, so it's got to get a bit bigger. And yet I do feel it still got the emotionality of the first one.
Coming up next, we're going to hear from the director, and he talks about how they approached the sequel.
I think a lot of times sequels have to be bigger just by nature, because if the first movie was a success, the second movie has to be bigger, which is not at all the way we went into it. We had to make it bigger only because the family left such an intimate space and went out into the world. And so when you go out into the world, what was really exciting in our specific movie is that when they go out into the world, they have no idea what's around the corner. So that is what we leaned into, that they have to walk through a forest to get to their next livable situation or they won't survive. Every single step of the way could be the end of life as they know it. And so I think that's the expansion that we went, is an organic idea of how do you survive when you have nothing left, and how do you cope with such a with being dealt such an emotional blow as losing the, you know, the father and the, and also the, in a way, the protector of the whole family.
Now, coming up next, we're going to hear from the director again, and he's going to talk about how insanely awesome Cillian Murphy is, who plays Emmett. And I just, again, love these kind of interviews where a director has such admiration for another actor. So here he is talking about Cillian Murphy, who plays Emmett, and more about the character too.
The beauty of Killian's character and what I was so excited when I wrote the character was he hasn't made a decision on how he wants to live his life, that there is so much fear in his life, so much loss in his life. He doesn't feel the need to be a part of any community. And yet when meeting this family, it's a real conundrum for him, because this family is, of course, something that you want to be a part of. You want to help in any way you can. That is a very nuanced thing to have to play. This sort of inner struggle is very difficult to play as an actor. You usually choose one or the other. Cillian Murphy is without a doubt one of the best actors, if not the best actor I've worked with, other than my wife. And the kids. The kids are amazing too. But there was something about Cillian, I had never seen that level of professionalism. I had never seen that level of preparation. His talent is, he's so good at all times.
Now, coming up next, we're going to hear from the producer, and he talks about the whole process of Krasinski telling him this, who needs to play this role. He had it in his head the whole time, and that's what he had to do. So again, this is the kind of reality show I would love to see. I want to see the process of a guy writing, or a woman writing, a story, and then the whole process of going, this is who I want to be in it, and then the director going to a producer saying, this is who I think should do it. That's the kind of show I would just sink my teeth into. Seeing that whole process from conception to release. That would be great TV. So, anybody out there, put your heads together, make that kind of reality show. I'm in.
The casting in the two movies is all John Krasinski. And for every single role, he called me and said, this is who I think is perfect for this character, when he wrote them. And I got the call. He's like, Cillian Murphy's Emmett. Now, Cillian Murphy, you know, we'd be so lucky to have him in this role. And John reached out to him. And like every other character, we really, there was no casting on the movies. It was, I wrote this role, it's Cillian Murphy. He reached out to Cillian Murphy, and he is Emmett. I mean, and that's how it's happened for both films, in every role. So it really, there was no conversations. And John's been dead on with everything.
Now, coming up next, we're going to hear from Cillian Murphy. And this is just a spectacular interview. When he first saw the first movie and what he does with that. Again, this is just so awesome. Check this out.
After I saw the movie, I was so blown away by it that I was like, I gotta write to John Krasinski, and just, because I didn't know him or Emily, I'd never worked with either of them before. I was like a fan of their work, but I'd never seen them or met them personally. So so I wrote this email just to John to say how much I enjoyed the film and how brilliant it was, and congratulating him on it. And then I chickened out, and I never sent it. I was like, don't do that. You don't need to be doing that. He's a busy man. He doesn't need to hear from some actor. And then like a year or so later, he called me up, and he was like, look, we're doing the second one. Would you be interested? And I said, man, I was gonna send you an email. So it was a lovely sort of serendipity, or like, I don't know, simpatico or something, that he was thinking of me for that part. You know?
That was just an awesome interview. And in all my excitement to get to the interview, I didn't give you the proper introduction to Cillian Murphy, who plays Emmett. So that's on me. He made a big splash in the 2002 film 28 Days Later, then had a big hit with the 2010 film Inception, and then another big hit in 2012 with The Dark Knight Rises, 2017, Dunkirk. I mean, this guy, every movie he's in is just spectacular. But if you don't remember him from any of that, you might know him from the phenomenal TV show Peaky Blinders. If you've never seen that, give that a shot, because he is just sensational. So anyway, that's a little bit more about him. And now moving on, up next we have Emily Blunt, who plays Evelyn, talking a little bit more about her husband, John Krasinski, the director.
I mean, I'm going to put the pressure all on John. I was kind of like, I know you can do it, you know. But I think he did feel an immense sense of pressure. But I think John quite likes working like that. I think he operates very well if there's a bit of a, you know, gun to his head on something. I think he doesn't mind it. And I just said to him beforehand, when he was slightly agonizing about how do I match it, I said, don't match it. Don't try and outdo it. The story's continuing. It's just a continuation. Like, so what happens? What do you want to see them do? But I think he went above and beyond, and he is a bit of a sort of creative hurricane. So I knew he'd be able to come up with something great. And then we had the incredible Cillian Murphy coming in and just crushing it for us as well.
Coming up next, we're going to hear from Cillian Murphy, who plays Emmett, and he's also going to talk about how John expands in the second film.
Well, I think because the first movie was so sort of intimate, and it's pretty much like one location for the most part, and it's a very, very clever way of setting up a world, which was set up, but we only got to see glimpses of what had happened sort of outside of their tiny little existence. And I think in this movie, he just goes slightly wider, and you can see slightly from a wider perspective what has happened in the world. It's still a very, 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 very small part of what has happened. And I think that is a clever way to approach a story, because you can keep moving back each time and show a bit more. And it poses a lot of questions without answering them, which I think is very clever.
Now, coming up next, we're going to hear from Emily Blunt. And in this interview, she talked about when they were on the set. Because a lot of times when they're on the set making this movie, they're still thinking how the movie was. Like, hey, this is almost a silent movie. You're not talking. No. You got to be more quiet, because they mic everything to enhance all the sounds that are making, from walking, grabbing things off the shelf, what have you. So just, this is her talking about that whole process and how fun it was.
Do you know, it is quite quiet, because I think the mistake the crew made sometimes is like, oh, it's a silent movie. And we're like, no, you guys have to be even quieter. Like, because you can hear everything. You can hear absolutely everything. So if someone's walking around or moving or eating, you can hear it in the background of the shot, because the sound department are trying to record everything, like picking up a teacup, like what does that sound like, and like they've got the mic on it so that you can, it's so real, you know. So we'd always be like, John, I'd hear John go, guys, it's not a silent movie, it's a sound movie. It's like, please, you know. So yeah, but then we would try and have some levity between takes. Like, it's such an intense movie, so Cillian and I would have a laugh between takes, and we'd just try and release the tension, you know, because it's intense. It's an intense movie.
Now, coming up next, we're going to hear from John Krasinski, and he's going to tell us how excited he is for us to finally see this movie, and how much they are glad that they could finally have us see it.
I'm so excited to show this movie to everyone, but, you know, selfishly from our standpoint, just because we've been, you know, you make a movie, you want people to see it, so we've been waiting for a really long time to show people. But from the outside perspective looking in, it's just, I think, a great experience and a great opportunity to escape. It's a world that I think can really take you out of your everyday life, and just take you to some place new where you get to experience great characters in a great world and be scared and have all these thrills, and then take a breather and go back to your life. And I think that it's something that only the theater can really offer to you. I think being in a dark room with strangers as many times as you hear it, it really is true. There's something very communal about that experience. There's something very powerful about that experience. And certainly our movie was specifically designed for the theatrical experience. So for all those reasons, selfish and otherwise, I'm really excited for people to see the movie.
Now, speaking of liking going to see movies, next we have Emily Blunt talking about how much they as a family enjoy going to the movies.
I love going to the movie theater. It's my favorite thing to do. We do it all the time. And I just love being encompassed and consumed by an experience. I love the dark and the energy in the room and the space between people. And oh, I think it's the best. It's the best date night ever. It's one of my favorite things to do, and it always will be.
Now, I don't know about you, but I'm not going to argue with her. Listen to the lady. You really should see this in the theater. It is worthy of seeing it in the theater compared to at home. It's great at home, but in the theater, you really get to grasp the tension and how it feels. Now, I hope you enjoyed our in-depth look at A Quiet Place Part 2. I personally enjoyed this follow-up to the first one. I'm not going to give away any spoilers. And as you could tell, I didn't play any clips. But in my defense, most of the clips didn't have a lot of dialogue. There was some action, but without seeing it and without a lot of buildup, it'd be hard to have this any scene really display how it was. That's why I didn't have any clips in this particular show. So if you guys have any questions, comments, or concerns, or a way to improve the show, please feel free to tell me. I can't fix what I don't know is broken. So drop me a line, cinemajudge@hotmail.com. Now, for all the listeners who stay around for the shout out, this is for you. For all you people around the world, I hope my voice finds you well. For those listening in your car, going to or from work, I'm glad to be your co-pilot. You do the driving, and I'll do the talking. Or if you're on break at work, I hope you're having a great break. Or for those who sit at your desk and listen while you plow through your hectic day, I hope your day is going well, and thanks for listening. And some of you have told me this, while you brush your teeth, you listen to the show, so don't forget those back teeth, people. Or some of you just listening on your free time, wherever or whatever you're doing, this is for you. It's now shout out time. Columbus, Ohio. Thank you. Madison, Wisconsin. Katy, Texas, is it? Is it Katy or Caddy? Whatever it is, thank you, Texas, for stopping by. You guys are always there for me. And I'm going to butcher this bad boy. Lake Elsinore, California. I know I've said that wrong before, but man, thank you, California, for stopping by. I really appreciate it. Rosemount, Minnesota. France, again, you guys are always there. Thank you so much. Washington, Virginia, you know I love it when you stop by. Thank you so much. And I hope I say this one right. New Effington, South Dakota. Thanks, South Dakota. I really appreciate it. And of course, like always, always there for me, Hogue, Ohio. Fantastic. I'm so glad you stopped by every episode and listen. I'm very grateful. And of course, Live Oak, Texas. Again, Texas, you guys keep stepping up, listening to the show. I hope what we share with you, you enjoy. And please keep listening. I really, really appreciate it. And now on to the bourbon toast. And I'll try to be quick about this because this show has gotten way out of hand and it's gone long. But there are so many great interviews, I just couldn't pull any of them out. They were just too good. So today, my bourbon toast go to the two Kathys. First, Kathy at Target. Thanks for always greeting me with such joy when I walk in. I appreciate it. And if you want to start your own podcast, then you just do that. Because trust me, if I could do it, anybody can do it. And Kathleen the Ginger, I hope you're feeling better. Give your dogs a scratch for me. Hopefully we get together one day and just chat. I miss our talks. Now, since the show got so long, I wonder how many of you are still sitting around listening. And if you are, I really appreciate it. That's incredible. But some people have asked me, you know, how I like doing behind-the-scenes stuff and like to know about that stuff. They've asked me, hey, what do you listen to when you're making the TV version, hence the audio that you hear, and do you listen to anything preparing to do the podcast? Well, if you so care, what I was listening to when I made what you heard today, not me speaking part, but the TV version part, I was listening to the Pink Floyd album, The Final Cut. It's not a very popular album, and it's not their best album, but for me, it was the most personal album to me growing up of their albums. It just kept evolving throughout my life every time I heard it. And I could go into it for a long story, but so when I was making this show, I was listening to that and Sinead O'Connor's The Lion and the Cobra. I needed a certain headspace for this particular episode, and it helped me get there. And if you've never heard or listened to that album, The Lion and the Cobra by Sinead O'Connor, it is truly phenomenal. Her voice is just miraculous. Now, that being said, sometimes when I know I'm going to be doing the podcast the next couple of days, you know, I get stage fright, I get all freaked out, I get all panicky and nervous. So sometimes I need something to either calm me down or get me psyched up, whatever it may be. Last couple of days, in preparation for this, I was listening to a little Warren Zevon. See, many of you might only be aware of his major staples like Werewolves of London, Lawyers, Guns, and Money, and Excitable Boy, and a few other, you know, radio regulars. But you'd be doing yourself an amazing favor if you took a deeper dive into his vast, diverse catalog. You might be skeptical, but I feel you'd be pleasantly surprised. His work is just so incredible. It's funny, it's heartbreaking, it's everything. And he sometimes does that in one song. So anyway, that was the headspace I was trying to get myself into last few days over the weekend. I threw on all his albums. So whatever platform you have, give him a shot. Just throw in a couple songs, not a couple. No, listen to a whole lot if you can. Again, he's truly underestimated, and he's more than just those few songs that you hear. All right, then. So until next time, be well, be good, and I'm gone. I'm Jeff. Thanks for listening to The Cinema Judge.